Good morning. It's 8:06. You're listening to the KPCW Local News Hour. I'm Parker Malatesta. And it is Wednesday, January 29th. Another cold one. And the Wasatch back should warm up, though, later in the day. On the phone to talk more about weather, I've got ABC4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning, Cedric.
Good morning, Parker. Yes, I'll tell you what. Talk about another frigid start with temperatures for the third morning in a row down into the single digits, close to zero. As we go throughout the day, though, we are looking at that sunshine returning across the area. So a lot of bright sky, and that's good news because that will help to at least make it feel a little warmer as we go throughout the day. So our temperatures for highs in Park City, climbing probably only into the upper 20s to around 30 degrees in the Heber Valley. Should get it right around the freezing mark, but that's it. That's going to be the high temperature for today, which means with mostly clear skies and light winds tonight, we see our overnight lows dropping back down into the single digits and teens again across the area. Not as cold as the past couple of mornings, but still probably looking at a low temperature around 10 degrees in both the Heber Valley and around Park City. Now, as we go throughout the day tomorrow, more sunshine will be in place for our Thursday, so we'll see those high temperatures rebounding back into the low to mid-30s, probably around the low 30s in Park City, and we'll call for the mid-30s here as we get towards the Heber Valley. But again, temperatures still running a few degrees below where they should be for this time of the year. Now, as we get into your Friday, we're going to start to notice some changes. As we begin the day on Friday, more of those cold temperatures with those overnight low temperatures dropping back down into the low to mid-teens. But as we go into the afternoon hours, we'll see our high temperatures climbing back into the 40s, low 40s around Park City, highs in the mid-40s for the Heber Valley there with partly cloudy skies. Those clouds will lead to the chance of some precipitation moving in starting Friday night. We're going to have an atmospheric river setting up here, mainly just to our north and west, but that atmospheric river will lead to a better chance of some rain and snow making its way into the area as we go into your Friday night and especially for your Saturday morning. I think we start off with mainly snow in Park City and the Heber Valley with temperatures below freezing on Saturday, but as we go into the afternoon, temperatures will actually warm above freezing. So that means that some of those snow showers could transition over to just some plain old rain showers because temperatures warm up to near 40 degrees in Park City for the afternoon. In the Heber Valley, we're looking at those highs climbing into the low to mid-40s as we go throughout your Saturday. And we'll keep that chance of rain and snow showers around into your Sunday. Mainly in the valley areas, probably just some cold rain showers out there with temperatures mainly above freezing. But in the mountains, we could see a few snowflakes still mixing in around Park City there during the afternoon on Sunday, but this is looking like more snow to rain scenario as temperatures really start to warm up. And by the time we get towards the beginning of next week, high temperatures will be approaching the low 50s in the Heber Valley. Yeah, the low 50s. And then as we get towards Park City, we'll be approaching the upper 40s to near 50 degrees. So warming well above average by the time we get towards the beginning of next week. So a frigid start, but warming up as we go towards the beginning of next week. And another cold snap may arrive just beyond the middle of next week. But before then, get ready for some unsettled weather for the weekend. Parker?
All right. Thanks, Cedric. Have a good one.
You too. Thanks.
And now with an update from the Utah Avalanche Center, I've got Drew on the line.
Hey, good morning. You know, those northeast winds are a nuisance. They were able to drift, erode and drift some snow along the higher elevations ski area. Control teams are able to trigger some soft slabs. Problem is these east winds tend to lead to some unusual loading patterns. And so even some backcountry observers cruising along were able to intentionally trigger some shallow, I'd say like 4 to 8 inches thick soft slabs. Those should still be on your radar for today if you're heading into the backcountry. We generally have an overall moderate danger, just relegated to the highest elevations for these lingering soft slabs. Isolated chance where you still might be able to trigger something into the old snow from early season, but that's going to be more pronounced in steep rocky terrain or terrain that has already avalanched within the last month or so. That classic case in point was up in the upper Tibble Fork area by what we call Forest Lake, sort of near the Wasatch Back as well. A party on Sunday triggered a 1 to 3 foot deep avalanche in terrain that had avalanched earlier during the holiday season, but had since reloaded with a little bit of wind, a little bit of new snow. Nobody was caught and carried, but again, just sort of an outlier. So again, overall moderate danger along the upper elevations. I think we're going to be trending towards low for tomorrow, and we'll see what the weekend brings.
All right. Well, thanks, Drew. Have a good one. Coming up, we'll be talking with Utah Department of Alcoholic Beverage Services Director Tiffany Claussen. She'll be discussing liquor store applications in Summit County and the bills regulators are watching this legislative session. Then Heber Police Spokesperson Sergeant Josh Weishar talks about crime trends in Heber and upcoming department events. We'll end the hour with local rap artist Peach. He'll be joining the show to preview his performance on Main Street during Sundance. After that, stay tuned for the Sundance Reel at 9. KPCW's Leslie Thatcher talks with directors of Khartoum, Sunfish, Alabama Solution, and Zodiac Killer Project about their 2025 Sundance Festival films. Tune in to KPCW at 9 a.m. every day this week to hear exclusive interviews with filmmakers and industry professionals to take a deeper dive into the 2025 festival. We'll be right back to talk with DABS Director Tiffany Claussen. Joining me over the phone now, I've got Utah Department of Alcoholic Beverage Services Director Tiffany Claussen. Good morning, Tiffany.
Good morning. How are you, Parker?
I'm great. Am I pronouncing your last name correctly?
Perfectly. Well done.
Awesome. Well, I did want to start with these, talking about these 37 package agency applications. So can you explain what exactly are package agencies and how are they different from larger state liquor stores?
Sure thing. So we actually, there's five different types of package agencies. Each has their own nuances and sort of has characteristics that make it special. The ones that you mentioned, the 37 specifically, are type 2 mm-hmm. and what we call type 3 package agencies. These are, to the average customer, they look like smaller liquor stores. They're different from our state liquor stores, though, because they're not managed by us. They're managed by private citizens, so private business owners, independent contractors who are in contract with us, and we approve these contracts in 3-year increments. So that contract period, the new contract period, is upon us. And so we're letting everyone know if you're a business owner or you've ever been interested in possibly having your own business as an independent contractor to run a package agency, now would be your time to get online and learn about the qualifications and to complete an application to be considered.
Yeah, and just why is DABS going forward with this? You know, what's kind of the larger objective here with these package
sure.
agencies?
Yeah, so package agencies have been around for multiple decades. So this isn't anything that's new, a new paradigm or new thing in the last couple of years. These have been around for quite a long time. In fact, there are some in your neck of the woods there. Mm-hmm. But these are outlets, right, that are managed in mainly rural areas or sort of underrepresented areas. And so it's a really great way to have local business people have a business, provide a service for market areas that might not be, you know, overly populated yeah. or in a heavy urban setting.
And so what do those qualifications look like for businesses and just what's the application process like?
Yeah. So the application process is live now. We have information on our website as well as a link. You can go to abs.utah.gov/package-agencies for more information on how to apply. A type 2 package agency can be attached to any type of business. So if you already have an existing business and maybe there's a nexus there, you could actually have a package agency kind of incorporated into that business, mm-hmm. Or it could be a standalone business. But basically, a package agent would go into contract if the commission, you know, selects that person as a contractor and would go into contract with us, and they would be able to sell any type of alcohol that we sell at our stores. And of course, all of the same rules apply. They have to have the same markup, right? And all of the pricing is the same. Mm-hmm. But it's a really great business for someone that's interested in it.
Yeah. Anything else you want to mention on the package agencies?
No, it's something that we're really excited about. And again, anyone across the state that might be interested, we hope they'll go to that link and learn more about it as an opportunity. And our staff can walk them through any questions they might have.
And what's that link again, just for listeners?
Absolutely. That link is abs.utah.gov/package-agencies.
Thank you. Well,
yeah.
Moving on, I did want to touch on the state legislative session, which began earlier this month. There's usually some kind of alcohol omnibus bill running around there in the state capitol. But just in general, what is the DABS watching this legislative session?
Absolutely. Yeah, I have not seen a first draft of the alcohol omnibus bill. As you know, and for your listeners, this is the way the state of Utah does it. It has several legislative leads that kind of become experts in alcohol policy, and they take any thoughts, ideas, suggestions, and they put it into one really large bill. I'm not sure. Obviously, I'm not a legislator. We do work closely with our legislative leads to provide them data when you have a question, maybe about a policy or a law or regulation, helping to make sure they know, A, how it impacts us to operationalize it, but also what it means to our consumers, right? Our citizens that are impacted by these laws. So I know they've been hard at work all year long, listening to citizens, listening to stakeholders in the space, whether it's manufacturers or prevention advocates. But just like everyone else, I'm also interested to see what will be in that bill, and hopefully we'll know in the next week or so.
Yeah, and does the DABS take any kind of active role in pushing for reforms, or do you kind of let the lawmakers do what they do?
Yeah, our role is to really carry out and execute, mm-hmm. operationalize the law, not to, we're not policymakers. Obviously, we are very interested because we have to carry it out. And so, again, we have really great legislative leads that I feel like really work hard to listen and listen to us, as well as all of the stakeholders in the space, so that they can make sure that any laws that they're going to create or even change, that they know all of the impacts of that and can mm-hmm. weigh kind of all sides to that before they take action. So I do think that the space is in really good hands, but we work really just to be a resource and to provide data and information, not to really get involved in advocating one way or another.
Yeah, and I kind of wanted to zoom out a little bit just to talk about DABS's just strategy overall. You know, Utah's obviously grown so much as a state, and, you know, the alcohol laws have changed drastically over the years. They were very strict and obviously are still quite strict compared to many other U.S. states. Whether it's the liquor licenses, restaurant licenses, is there any way in which DABS is looking to change how you operate?
You know, we've been really focused the last 4 years since I've been at the DABS. We're focused on that service first mission, providing excellent customer service, whether you're doing business with us in licensing and compliance, whether you're doing business with us at a retail store, or even as a consumer or customer of our prevention education programs, really making sure we have that no wrong door approach, service-first mentality in everything that we do. And that includes modernizing our operations. So that's really been our focus. How can we make sure that we either build or retrofit stores so that they create a shopping experience, not just a buying experience? How can we make sure that our stores are safe? How can we make sure the businesses that we support, so many, right, where you are, that, you know, we have visitors from all over the world that come and visit us, and their first and only experience with the state of Utah might be either through one of our retail stores or from one of our business partners in the hospitality industry. So we have been really focused on how to be successful in all of those areas. In terms of licensing and bringing on more licenses, we did work closely with the legislature last year to provide them data and make sure they understood the rate of depletion for some of the licenses that can become scarce. And so I know that's something that they've been working on, something that we provided information and data on, but not anything that we've been spearheading this year, mm-hmm. again, not to advocate for.
Yeah, and just for more background, you know, talking about how those licenses can be scarce, can you just kind of explain how the DABS goes about handing out licenses to different businesses across the state?
Sure. So it's interesting. We have two different bodies. So we have the department, which is what I oversee and I'm in charge of. And so we take the applications from people who want to be have a bar, restaurant, or hotel. And then we process that application. We make sure they meet all the requirements. There are no proximity issues. They've got all the training, but, you know, insurance and all of that. We then turn that over to the commission. And so we have a 7-member commission. One of the commissioners actually lives in the Park City metro area there. And every month at their monthly commission meeting, they take those applications that we've processed and vetted. And they say, oh, great, we have 5 licenses available. We have 3 applicants for this type of license. And they have a discussion many times, and then they'll award those licenses. So again, we kind of do the vetting, and we make sure everything meets the statutory requirements, and the commission actually awards those.
Gotcha. Well, yeah. Moving on, I did want to ask about, you know, there was a lawsuit filed recently involving one of the luxury communities here in Summit County, Glenwild. Don't mean to get into all the specifics of that suit, but there is a piece in there that is specifically about alcohol and allegations that there was, you know, wine being bootlegged from Evanston, Wyoming. Can you just touch on DABS's stance on these alleged wine imports and any investigations you may have conducted?
Sure. Look, like many other people, I became aware of the lawsuit, specifically the lawsuit, right, regarding Glenwild because of the reports in the news, right? And out of those lawsuits, there's obviously alleged behavior that has a nexus to us, but we are not part of that lawsuit, and so I'm not privy to the, you know, I'm not privy to the minutia of the lawsuit. That said, though, bootlegging is absolutely illegal. I want to make that really clear to your listeners. It's illegal to bring alcohol into the state of Utah for resale purposes, bottom line. Now, if you're a private resident and you are traveling from anywhere really outside the state, could be California, could be Wyoming, you could be coming from out of the country, from a wonderful trip to France or to Italy, from Italy, you can bring in alcohol for personal use, right? And it's up to 9 liters. You can, you know, we're Americans, right? We don't work on the metric system. So when we think of 9 liters, basically a case of wine, you can bring up to a case of wine for your own personal use per trip, right? For everyone in your party that's 21 or older. Again, you can't resell that. So if you're intending to resell it, that is the point at which it becomes illegal. So, you know, in 2002, we did become aware that there were some, there was potentially some, you know, alleged non-compliant activity taking place. We took this very seriously. We responded quickly, appropriately, like we would anybody, be it a country club or luxury community or a mom and pop operation. And we worked with the AG's office. We worked with our law enforcement partners. And in the course of the investigation, again, working with the AG's office and our law enforcement partners, we didn't find evidence. There was no evidence revealed at that time that would have resulted in an immediate violation. Mm-hmm. Obviously, though, because of the allegations and the concerns, that was a really great opportunity to talk to the new management there, the new board, and to make it extremely clear, abundantly clear, what is lawful, what is not lawful, having them giving advice on how to have a better education program, training program for their staff, and have obviously we've maintained our schedule of compliant visits since then. And so there's not been an issue that's been noticed at any of their compliance audits since that time. So something that we'll definitely continue to watch. It's very serious. Obviously, the courts will decide how they want to decide as far as the lawsuit goes. But yeah, we take it really serious. And we hope that everyone understands that it's a crime. It's illegal. And there's no, it's avoidable, right? And so we want everyone to avoid being on the wrong side of the law in terms of bootlegging.
Yeah, and I guess just to, you know, reiterate those rules again, you're saying it's based on resale purposes. So just to reiterate, let's say I go to Evanston and pick up a few bottles of wine and bring it back to my apartment for my own pleasure, you're saying that is totally okay.
As long as it is, as long as you, Parker, are 21 and older, and you're bringing in less than 9 liters, and it's just for you to enjoy with friends and family in the privacy of your own home or wherever, and you're not charging them for that, the enjoyment of that pleasure, then yes, then that's completely compliant. The law has contemplated and kind of provided an opportunity for that to happen.
Yeah, so it's really just the resale piece, and obviously the 21 and the 9 liters too, but it's really that resale piece that you guys are going enforcing.
Absolutely.
Well, I did lastly want to ask, you know, outgoing Surgeon General under the Biden administration, Dr. Vivek Murthy, came out a few months ago and said he wanted to issue an advisory to potentially put cancer risk, you know, labels on alcohol. And, you know, as the federal government is just looking at these regulations, I'm just curious, is the state at all? I mean, are any of the states involved in that process? Do you give feedback into that, or just are you watching that?
This is not a process that we are involved with specifically. It is absolutely something that I am personally monitoring and staying on top of. I can tell you, I was recently at a conference with other my counterparts in other control states.
Yeah.
And whether you're a control, you lead a control state in this way, or even what we call open states, we all regulate alcohol. And I can tell you, everyone, open state or control state, is following this. Because, you know, whatever happens from there could have significant impacts on a lot of things related to the alcohol industry. And so I know suppliers and manufacturers of these products are watching it closely, as are regulators.
Yeah. Well, and just how many other control states are there that operate? I know the rules may be slightly different, but roughly similar to Utah, how many other states are there in the country?
Yeah. I love getting that question, because I think sometimes we think we're like total unicorns, right? Like no one does what we do here. There's 17. There are 17 other jurisdictions because we have 16 states that are what we call control states like us. And then one is actually a county. There's a county in Maryland that is a control state count, or not a control, a control county, so to speak. And so, you know, there are many other people that operate like we do, and it's great because you really do have a balance of providing a service, right, but also being able to see financial benefits that can be reallocated to kind of curb the social ills of consumption too, right, which is abuse and DUIs and underage drinking prevention. So I think it's a system that works really well. Obviously, the responsibility is on us at the DABS from our retail perspective to provide a good experience, a safe experience, so that our customers don't feel like they're in a control state, right? They can still find the right product at the right time and hopefully for the right price. And then it doesn't really matter so much to the customer whether we're a control state or an open state.
Yeah. Finally, any other PSAs or info you want to get out there to our listeners?
Look, we've got a last couple of days of Parents Empowered Month. This is January, which is our Parents Empowered Month. And so it's a great opportunity for me to just do a quick plug for our Parents Empowered campaign, where we work to educate families, parents, and caregivers on the dangers of underage drinking. That brain is not fully formed until you're 21, some cases 25. And so we just encourage parents to go on our website to learn more about why you do not want your child to drink alcohol, even in the safety of your own home, right? Because there are significant biological and physiological effects that you can't reverse. And so we just want everyone to know how important that is. It's Parents Empowered Month for another couple of days. That's it. Have a great time with the rest of ski season. And if there's any other thing that you need or you want to chat, you know where to find us, Parker.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Tiffany, for joining us this morning.
Okay, great. Thank you. Bye.
We've been speaking with Utah Department of Alcoholic Beverage Services Director Tiffany Clausen. I'll be right back after this. Joining me over the phone now, I've got Heber Police Spokesperson Sergeant Josh Weishar. How's it going today, Josh?
It's been a great day. It's cold out there.
It's a little chilly for sure. I did want to start, you know, I understand during the recent Heber City Council retreat, there was a presentation The police department did this SWOT analysis, which is, for our listeners, it's not like a SWAT team, it's S-O-W-T, it's like a planning tool. And I thought there were a few interesting variables in there just about cost of living and growth in the Heber Valley. And could you just talk, you know, we talk a lot a bit about here in Park City, just firefighters, police officers struggling to live in town, having to commute very far. How is that situation for the Heber Police Department?
Well, it's an interesting development. It, you know, it's great that we live in a community that a lot of people want to move to, mm-hmm. and it's fantastic, our community that we live in, and we love it. But, you know, in the civil service and community jobs like law enforcement, the pay is not usually not a huge amount, so that you're not living in poverty, you're not living in a lot of wealth or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But so it can cause a problem. Now, unfortunately, in Heber, the pay for the police officers does not match the cost of living for housing. Mm-hmm. So it causes us to expand. Up until, I would say, maybe 4 years or so ago, we were able to limit our hiring to Wasatch County, maybe some of Summit County, and you'd had to live within those boundaries. But because of the cost of living has gone up and the cost of housing and rent has gone up so high, we've had to just kind of widen our hiring. And I would say more than half our department now is outside of Wasatch County. And so they have to commute to get into, you know, get to work and things like that. So we have to work on that, which, you know, becomes a problem for us for hiring, because if you're getting paid the same rate as, you know, any of the other locations in Heber or close to Heber,
yeah.
and you have to pass by those agencies just to get to work, sometimes those agencies become enticing. So it affects maybe our hiring and retention and stuff like that. So just something that we have to work on and see what we can do to help mitigate that and keep officers here in Heber and working for us.
Totally. And obviously, along with cost of living, you know, that Heber Valley has also experienced a lot of growth in the last several years. I mean, what does that population increase mean for the police department? Any challenges you guys are focused on?
Well, what it does is it puts communities in places that were fields, right? So we have lots and lots of growth in our community. And so it causes it so that, you know, our three or so officers that are patrol that are on at any given time, plus a traffic car, that limits them to certain areas or certain calls of volumes that they can actually attend to, and makes it so that officers aren't in the residences or the, you know, the, those communities as much. So with the growth, we, you know, you constantly need more officers to cover that area and be able to police that area, have a presence there. You know, an ounce of prevention will go a long way, and just having police officers and cars out and about helps a lot. But when we have such a big community that it, as it develops, we have to grow with it, which just kind of comes back to how, you know, getting hiring and getting people here, and but still having them commute an hour just to get here becomes, you know, it just becomes another hiring difficulty for us.
Totally. Well, moving on, I understand the department recently contracted with Midway City to patrol over there. How's that working out so far?
It's been great. We've contracted for two officers over there so we can get that covered for 12-hour shifts Monday through Sunday. And, you know, every day, and we'll have an officer there that's usually 7 to 7, 6 to 6, something around those lines, as a Heber police officer and respond to calls, serving Midway. We've got a new stickers, a new design on the police car over there that kind of shows the difference. But it's been great. We were able to hire two more officers for that. But they are dedicated to Midway, so it doesn't change our, you know, policing in Heber City. But we're super excited to be over there, and we really love working over there in Midway.
Yeah. Well, Josh, I understand there's a few scams you all have flagged going around the area. You want to share those PSAs with our audience?
Yeah, so we've got a few scams that go around. First of all, I just want everybody constantly try and look out for your elderly, for the older mm-hmm. citizens in our community, because they are the biggest victims of these crimes. The younger generation know a lot about Bitcoin, but the old generation doesn't know too much about what Bitcoin is. And the scammers are using that to, along with AI, are using that to scam our elderly. We have some Bitcoin machines where you can deposit cash and into Bitcoin throughout. You know, those are just kind of popping up and they are available if you want. So what we get is scammers calling in. They can use AI to mimic family members or something along those lines in the voice and talk about, hey, Grandma, I need money, or something along those lines. If anybody calls and says something like that and says, hey, but can you send it to me in Bitcoin or in a gift card and just give me the code, those are scammers. Don't give out that money. That's not what you want. That's what's happening, and we see a lot of that, and again, with our elderly population. We do have one more scam that's kind of horrific in our opinion. We do have juveniles that tend to get on social media and think they're communicating with other juveniles, and they end up sharing photos of themselves in indecent ways or something along those lines, and then that the person online will turn around and blackmail them, saying they're going to post those pictures all over social media if they don't send them money. So if you talk to your kids about not sending any photos to people that you don't know online, and elderly about Bitcoin and gift cards, and not giving out that kind of funds to people over the phone or emails or anything like that, then that would be some of our biggest scams that we're seeing throughout the community.
Yeah, and I understand, too, just in the department, you guys are working on officer safety. You want to touch on what that looks like?
Yeah, officer safety, we always are trying to grow and find ways to keep officers safe when it comes to law enforcement. Always, if we get in a high stressful situation where we have somebody that's barricaded or SWAT call outs where the guns are involved or high violence, we're constantly thinking of ways that we can mitigate any injury on both sides of that, whether it be, you know, tactical gear or shields. So we're working towards getting a vehicle. It's called a Bearcat, and it's just something that would be officers would be able to be inside. It could stop, your rifle rounds, your ARs, your handguns, any of those rounds, and explosives to a certain extent. So they would be able to help officers approach a house that maybe have a barricaded suspect or somebody inside that with a weapon, be able to communicate through loudspeakers along those lines, in the safety of an armored vehicle. And then we're also working on to get a canine for our communities. We have one canine through the county, but Heber City wants to get one of our canines as well. And so we're going to have an officer apply for that, and we'll work on getting a canine so that we can, better keep officer safety and use that for community policing, as well as apprehension and drug and alcohol prevention, stuff like that. So that's what we're working on, and it's pretty exciting times for us here.
Yeah, can you talk about all the things that canines are able to do?
So their canines usually have two capacities. They're either a bite dog or a dog that smells for things. So a sniff dog is what we call them. So usually they can smell. You can do cadavers. You could do bombs. You could do drugs or something along those lines, and then you just train the dog, or you purchase the dog that's trained on those specific things and work towards using the dog to locate those things in vehicles and buildings. If it's a cadaver dog looking for anybody's deceased in fields or something along those lines, just as you're working. And then there's the bite element, which is a apprehension dog, which you could send instead of having officers run into a building or something along those lines. We could use a canine. There are usually two sounds that will get somebody to give up quickly. It's usually a racking of a shotgun or a bark of a dog. So if you can get the dog to bark and have somebody give up instead of fight with the officers, it's a better outcome for both.
Yeah, and then I also understand you guys have a new recruit going through the police academy right now.
Yeah, we've got Brian Cuthbertson. He's pretty excited. We were able to throw up his taser video. He's kind of getting ready to go through the academy coming up soon. He's part of that new hire for Midway. He's going to come in as we were able to hire a new officer and send one of our current officers over there to work in Midway. So he'll backfill for us, and we're pretty excited to have him.
Yeah. Lastly, Josh, I got to ask. So a few weeks ago, it kind of fits with the police academy thing. You all posted a video on your social media that I believe was one of the newer recruits being tased in kind of a demonstration. So is that something every new officer has to go through?
So when you have those tools, we always train that, hey, at some point someone could take those tools and use them against you. So it's really good to have that experience. It's not something that's required to carry a taser, but it is highly recommended. And so we want everybody, you know, all of our officers to experience that. Also, when they're going to deploy a taser, to kind of know what they're inflicting on somebody. So it's very common. I would say 90% and maybe 99% of the officers here, including civilians, have done the taser deployment, and it's quite a shock.
Have you been tased?
I have. I sounded like Tarzan.
Can you describe what it feels like?
Well, it's 5 seconds of electricity running through your body, but it feels about like 30 to 40 minutes of electricity going through your body. It just doesn't shut off. When your brain says, oh, it's been 5 seconds, it just keeps going. The way it works is it locks up all your muscles and just kind of freezes you from moving. That's why when you see people get tased, they go stiff as a board and they fall over. That's really what we're looking for. It's not the pain. It's more of the lack of movement or stopping of whatever, you know, destructive or bad behavior that's going on so that we can place them in custody or something along those lines. But it is horrible. It's a horrible feeling for sure.
All right, Josh, anything else you want to mention?
We have our annual Easter egg hunt that we're going to start working towards. We're pretty excited for Mountain Land Auto Spa or Mountain Land Auto is supporting us with that. We're going to schedule it for the 19th of April, so we're pretty excited to have that coming up. And then the rest of the year is coming, and we're super excited to be, you know, serving our community throughout 2025.
All right. Well, we appreciate you joining us this morning. Have a good one.
You too. All right. Thanks. Bye-bye.
We've been speaking with Heber Police spokesperson Sergeant Josh Weishar. I'll be right back after these messages. I've got a full studio with me right now. We've got Peach, Adam, and Steez in with me right now. You guys each want to introduce yourselves?
Yes, sir. Thank you for having us, man. It's great to be back in the city. I'm Peach.
I'm Adam.
I go by Steady Steez. Hello. Good morning.
Good morning. Glad to have you guys here. Peach, I understand you've got local roots here. Tell us a bit about yourself.
Yes, sir. Born and raised. My entire life went to Park City High School, skied PCMR competitively, you know, did the whole thing.
Yeah.
Got into music and moved out to L.A., and now I'm just traveling around trying to do the thing, you know.
What about you two? Where are you guys from?
Salt Lake City originally.
Salt Lake City?
West Valley City.
West Valley City. So you've got some Utahns up in here.
Wasatch kids.
So you guys all play together?
Yes, sir.
Can you tell me what each of you, I guess we'll start with Peach.
Yeah, so I'm just singing vocals, writing songs, learning the guitar right now. But Adam to my right here, he plays guitar. He produces all the music too before we even make it live. And then Steez is playing guitar as well and some backup vocals, all of them and everything like that.
So, yeah, so. And I understand you have a show coming up?
Yes, sir, tomorrow, Thursday the 30th at Flanagan's from 5 p.m. to 6:45. Adam will also be playing a set there as well.
Where can I get tickets?
He's sick. Just at the door.
Really?
Yeah, just play at the door. I don't know. I think it might just be a cover, but it's, yeah, no tickets.
Nice. So you guys all produce, do you guys do anything individually or do you all collab all the time?
Yes, sir. Yeah, I have my own individual project as well. I'll be doing a set list opening up for my friend here to my left tomorrow night. And it's been fun. Me and Steez also, we all collaborate on each other's music. And,
right.
You know, Steez has his own solo project as well.
Yeah, we're all just a conglomerate of artists who write songs and just have fun, man. It's great to be surrounded by like-minded, you know, driven individuals. So it just makes us be better.
Who would you guys say your top artists you're inspired by?
Honestly, like, forever, I'm a Mac Miller kid
Mac Miller.
Through and through. Yeah. Through and through. I think we all just love Mac, but there's so many. It's hard. It's hard to put it down. But
go all day,
I'll just say Mac. Right? Yeah, leave it at that for now.
Yeah. How would you describe your music?
Man, it's been a journey. Like, there's been so many different types of styles of music, but now we're really tapped in and to like the country, folk, Americana style stuff with some pop leaning records as well. But yeah, it's very country, folky, and fun, like danceable and, you know, a little bit sad sometimes, but I think it's good to be emotional, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And Peach, your publicist sent over some like pretty staggering growth numbers. And I wanted to talk a bit about like how you leverage social media, like YouTube, whatever, to like help grow your guys' brand. I mean, can you kind of walk me through some of the strategies you guys
using? It's been interesting. I mean, this past like 6 months, we've just been grinding organically, but it's mainly just, you know, content. We're filming so much content. It's
a lot
insane.
Of video.
Editing. I'm just sitting there like every day just editing like so much content. It's a little bit mind like melting, but
for sure.
But yeah, it's just consistency at the end of the day. Like, we have never been this consistent until now, and it's showing, you know, and that's all it takes, just being driven, posting content every day, 3-4 times a day.
Yeah.
And then releasing music, you know.
And I even saw you guys, you made like some certain playlists on Spotify. I mean, like, what's the process for getting that? Is that just...
Yeah, it's just pitching and
really?
It kind of plays into the same thing, consistency. Like, Spotify recognizes if you're releasing a lot and getting listens, and they kind of help you out when they see that. So it's just a, you know, a growth thing. As these platforms see growth, they help garner more growth, like, for you with like small things, like editorial stuff and things like that.
Yeah. So what projects are you guys working on that's coming up?
Yeah, so we were actually just in the studio last night. We recorded a new one called Don't Miss Your Moment. I have a song dropping November 14th. I think that's Valentine's Day. I didn't mean for that, but it kind of works. It's kind of like a love song.
You can tell his love life is hurting there.
One day.
Forgetting about that. Yeah, exactly. Or maybe you haven't figured out, I think.
Yeah, maybe I understand it too much. That it's.
You understand.
But yeah, and you know, we've been working on a project for, I mean, I don't know, probably, I guess, years at this point, but album-wise, for coming this summer. And I'm sure both these boys have some summer projects coming up, too.
Yeah. You want to touch on what you're working on?
Summer 2025, we're going to do a, you know, pop fusion. Obviously, you know, there's such a big country movement right now that might be a...
What do you think is driving that? Because I sense that, too. I mean, is there...
Culture.
Just the culture?
I think...
It's just mass.
The way... You know, rock and roll even phased out into, you know, the current hip hop and then trap landscape. I think we're just seeing the beginning of the next 10, 20 years of something. And yeah, I think there will be some after
very
that
true.
As well.
Yeah.
But a good artist will just, you know,
roll with it.
Yeah, on trend and on beat with, you know, what's going on today. And yeah, I don't know. I think we all just kind of make what our ears are attracted to. And
very true.
That happens to be the same thing Spotify playlists are attracted to.
Yeah, you know, sometimes it matches up with the world, and that's cool. I mean, as artists, creative in general, I think you have to be fluid but you don't have to give up your, you know, authenticity.
Yeah.
But you have to be fluid with the way that the industry works. I think that's probably in every industry, you know. So
whenever we're in the studio, that's like my one job, is I'm always trying to like make a little more pop, a little more industry, and then his job is to be a true artist.
It's just to sing.
And try to sound good. Yeah, and be raw. And, you know, I think tomorrow night will be a good, if you guys can make it, it'll be a good vibe.
And what time is that again at Flanagan's?
Starts at 5. We go to 6:45. And then there's music all day there. But, yeah, we're 5 to 6:45. Just chilling down at Flanagan's.
Yeah. And, you know, we talked a bit about it with social and just with these streaming platforms. Like, just the music industry in 2025, like, what do you think is working? What is not working? Or just what are the challenges?
I honestly think that we're kind of getting back to that authentic place where people want authenticity over anything.
Yeah.
Because there was a moment, I think, where it was very trendy and very gimmicky. Like, you know, people just wanted to be, like, entertained. But now I think people want to feel again, you know, through this music and through these people. But, yeah, and I'm excited for that, because before it's kind of just social media driven. It still has that to it, but you kind of have to back it up, I think, at this point. With music, so yeah.
Yeah, anything you guys have just run into and just in your careers?
Video, I think.
Yeah, they love it.
And, true. And, you know, vertical, short form content and doing a bunch of it and also making it quality and quantity. I think that we saw a huge quantity boom in the last few years and, you know, even very hyper-edited reels and TikToks. And
I think
it's getting into more like just someone's random footage from a bar show at Flanagan's.
There you go.
Will probably go more viral than some that someone edited for 2 hours and it's all.
Because is it true that like rap albums would have like an absurd amount of songs because the more songs you had, there was incentive to that?
And they'd load up the albums with other features and stuff, which I think that's kind of, rap is kind of the main genre that loads them.
There's a formula. I mean, Post Malone just did the same thing with like
country
27 songs.
Yeah. 27 songs. Yeah,
I don't know.
And like every big country.
F1 trillion was something around there.
It's definitely a way to drive sales for sure.
But yeah. Well, we'll tell you. Tell our audience where, if they can't make the show tomorrow, where can they catch your music?
Yeah, you can catch it all platforms at Peach. It's not spelled like the fruit. It's spelled P-E-E-C-H. So it's two E's, no A. And it's everywhere. Instagram, Spotify, Apple Music, wherever you listen, you can find it there. New song comes Valentine's Day. We just released a song like 2 weeks ago, so called When I'm Gone.
I did want to ask how'd that name come to be?
Which one?
Peach.
Peach. Oh, yeah. It's actually from out here, because I was a competitive skier growing up, and my Instagram was Harry Peaches. My first name's Harry. I don't know why it was that. I think I just thought it was funny. I was like 12 years old. I was like 12. But everybody just called me Harry Peaches, like up in the skiing world. And then I was just like, started making music. I'm like, Peaches? No, I was like, that wouldn't work. So then I was like, Peach is cool.
Yeah.
And I had to spell it different from the fruit, so I'd show up on Google. Like, if you search me up, you just a bunch of fruit. It works now. So
we got a lot of ski bums listening. Do you want to flex your ski career at all? What did that entail?
There we go.
I was corking a lot. I'll just say that. I'm not as good as they are now, though. Some of these kids are insane.
Yeah.
I was watching X Games and seeing some of the boys I used to ski with. Wow.
Yeah, I'm a backcountry guy, so I haven't risked going up with him yet and embarrassing myself, but maybe one day me and Steez will hit the slopes with him.
Yeah, we're going to do it soon.
Yeah. All right, well, we're about out of time, guys. Anything else you want to mention?
No worries. Hopefully we'll see you guys tomorrow at Flanagan's.
Five to six, 45 p.m. Flanagan's on Main. All right, appreciate you guys joining me this morning.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
All right, we've been talking with Adam, Peach, and Steez. They're playing tomorrow night at Flanagan's at 5:30. You can catch them there on Main Street. We'll be right back after these messages. You're listening to the KPCW Local News Hour. I do have some breaking news this morning out of the Park City School District. Lindsay Huntsman is the new superintendent of the Park City School District. We'll have more information on our website, kpcw.org, on that later today. And finally, just some local news to round out the hour. The Utah Department of Health and Human Services data show the number of daily opioid prescriptions has dropped to 4,000 from a high of 7,000 in 2017. Intermountain Health says the achievement is the result of collaborative efforts from health systems, healthcare providers, the state of Utah, community coalitions, and patients, all aimed at reducing opioid overuse and addiction in Utah. In 2015, Utah began the Use Only as Directed campaign to educate people on the opioid epidemic. In 2021, the program was rebranded as the Know Your Script campaign to help reduce overdose risks. The program provides information on responsible prescription drug use, safe storage and disposal, the risks of prescription medications, and resources for treatment and overcoming addiction. Health Department data also shows 606 Utahns died as a result of a drug overdose in 2024. 75% of those were opioid-related. Some final news on the way out. Olympic bobsledder Keisha Love of West Jordan has won her second and third consecutive World Cup medals in monobob. Love finished third in the first of two races in the single-person bobsled event in St. Moritz, Switzerland over the weekend. She took second in the second race. U.S. athlete Alana Myers-Taylor also took home her first World Cup gold, winning both her first and second races. The U.S. bobsled team will be in Lake Placid for the final stop of the North American Cup.